I'm Donna.
And I'm Carrie.
And we are Paranormal Chicks.
Episode 314.
Okay, right off the bat, let me talk about how bad I have attachment issues. I mean, we already know this, but I was watching Fixer to Fabulous, which is my favorite HGTV show. And I've talked about them before because one of their workers, like the construction guy, he had an eye patch. And I'm like, I want to know why. I want to know the backstory, all the things. Anyway, it's Jenny and Dave Mars, and Dave Mars is my man, okay? Like, he is so cute.
You literally sounded like that cartoon, like, blind girl that goes, it's a man!
From Princess Frog? Princess and the Frog?
No, maybe, actually.
Where she's like, Big Daddy, or whatever. No,
maybe, but I thought it was way older than that. I was picturing on Droopy.
Oh, I don't know. But Lottie is her name for Charlotte. From The Princess and the Frog.
Okay, Disney facts.
Rich coming from you.
I have my niche movies. You, however, just freaking scoot over, Walt Disney.
Oh, gosh. Okay, anyway, but seriously, Dave Mars, he is so freaking handy and just, I love him, right? But there's this older man who works for them. And again, he's on their construction crew, but he's old. His name is Joe. And he is just like the sweetest, like, grandpa ever, you know? And he's the one who's always with Jenny getting in trouble, like, oh, we're going to try this, or yeah. Oh, whatever. You know, he's like,
yeah,
that guy. On this last episode, which I'm far behind anyway, but he told them that he's retiring.
I thought you were about to say he died.
No, but you would have thought he did. I was blubbering.
Really?
Oh my God. I was like, not Joe. Like, because he's just like the highlight of the show for me. Like,
yeah.
Dave Mars, love him. But Joe, like, he's the heart of the show.
He's like the Uncle Si of the duck people.
The Mighty Duck?
No. The Duck Callers.
Oh, Duck Dynasty.
Yeah. Like, he just always has his little quips, and, yes, you know?
Yeah. Okay, sorry. I go straight to the Mighty Ducks.
That, like, doesn't surprise me.
What? But yes. And, like, Jenny was tearing up. And so it was just all this. And I was like, I don't know this man. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, like, I was bawling last night.
Well, we worked our little tushies off this weekend because we're getting the house ready to be painted this week. This motherfucking project, y'all, has taken a life of its own because I work so damn hard. Because we also like clean closets out and, you know, organize things and clean things and blah, blah, blah.
Well, it's because you have to like clean a place to then put
move
all the
something.
Other shit.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we had to like move heavy stuff out of our room into another room because we made it like Colby's man cave and all the things. But we're almost there, y'all. Although I bought these faucets that were so beautiful that we're going to go on the new vanity. And Chloe's like, I'm going to go ahead and get the faucets installed on there so we can just like have everything ready so that as soon as like the painting and all, we can put the, you know, slider right in. Well, the faucets didn't fucking fit. So we had to take those back. And did you know when we took them back, one package was open, obviously, because we had to test it and it was, they were too big. They were widespread, you know, insert Donna joke.
No, you did make a joke, though.
Yeah, I said widespread like my legs, but really more so because of my belly.
Because this girl, man spreads like nobody's business. Like, sometimes I'm like, ow, your leg is into me. Like, she just like...
It's because my fupa's gotten so big.
Mine is bigger. But you just like, well, she'll just like lay her leg on you.
Yes, I do that because I need proprioception. But you don't because your legs are little. Yours don't reach that far.
True. And also, my legs have not been spread wide in a long time.
But did you know, because the one that was open, the girl that when we were returning them was like checking, was like looking at everything. She was like, looks good to me. I was like, do people return like damaged ones? Like, you know, they get it out, break it or whatever. She's like, yeah, or they'll put their old faucets back in it and take it back. I was like, what?
Oh my gosh.
She was like, oh yeah, girl, people do all kinds of things.
What the hell?
Oh, would never, God. First of all, would never have the balls to do that.
Right.
But second of all, that literally didn't even cross my mind.
No.
Like, even asking her, I was like, oh, they they like drop it. Like, that's so you. They dropped it and dented it, so they brought it back to you. Oh, okay. No, she's like, they returned their old shit in it.
How did that get in there?
We must have brought the wrong one. Gah. On a serious note, though, we got a little feedback on our positions on handwriting analysis and polygraphs. And
can I just say that it wasn't me this time that...
Right. Well, I think in...
You're still going to make it my fault, though.
No. No, I came across not how I intended it to be. Because I was trying to explain to you that it's not that simple as far as, like, they compare more than just, like, you being like, hey, and then them being like, oh, that, you know, and then that the polygraphs are more in-depth and that you do get questions before, et cetera, et cetera. That doesn't mean that I agree with them, though. Like, that doesn't mean I think that they should be admissible in court or that they can't be tricked. But here in Mississippi, they are used for... like sex offenders in their rehab and all, they will have to pass a polygraph to make sure that they're disclosing everything. So now, do I think that someone could absolutely fake it and it should it be admissible in court? Absolutely not. But the whole point of that conversation was just to say, hey, it's more in depth now than the simplistic of like, oh, let me just compare this handwriting or let me just ask you these questions and look at your heartbeat or whatever. They look at your eyes and all of that. Thank y'all for pointing that out, though, because it did open up a conversation of, hey, this is kind of where we stand on it versus how I think it came across in the episode. But if somebody's like a true sociopath, they're going to be able, no matter what you do, because they don't have the emotions that a polygraph is supposed to elicit. Like, they are incapable of having that anxiety, that fear, that guilt. They don't feel that. They don't care. So they're not going to be able to feel that ever. There's always going to be people that can fake a polygraph.
Yeah.
Or even fake their handwriting. And even, like, this may be more movie style, but people who have, like, dissociative identity disorder, do they write in different handwriting styles depending on...
Yeah.
Or is that like just like what how a movie's portrayed? That's probably how a movie's portrayed it. I know we have a couple listeners that have DID, so let me know.
Me too. But also, I don't know what this says about me, but I wish I knew what a sociopath felt like where they have no anxiety and no anything because all I am is anxiety.
No, I know what you mean. You don't want to... I get what you mean.
Yeah, I don't want to be a sociopath.
You're just like, what's it like to not have to feel wound up like a spring?
Yes.
Yeah, I get that. Well, we say all the time that we wish that Divergent was real, where we could like take this pill and experience this thing that's like not actually going to hurt us or not actually, which I think they actually did get hurt. Like they could like die in those scenarios, but that type of thing where you could experience, okay, what really is, you know, a week like in prison or what really is it like to not have anxiety?
Yeah, because like seriously, my dreams have been riddled with anxiety. In my waking time, I am just super anxious. But then I watch this show called Apples Never Fall or something like that on Peacock. And it was family drama and it gave me so much anxiety. It's a good watch, but like seriously, holy shit, it was so much. Like, I feel like that's not normal. And no. I take medicine for this and I'm still like this.
Well, there are days too that I take my medicine and it feels like I took nothing.
Yeah. Now, and then if I do forget my medicine, then I'm like, oh, this is how it would be non-medicated. Okay, much worse. But I still wish I could just have a day where I just breathe, you know, like, oh, things are good.
Today was like the day of all days. It felt like everything went in retrograde, antigrade, all the grades, and the world just collided. Like, I can literally name 5 people that have said today how terrible today was.
Yeah, today wasn't great.
So weird. Just like the weirdest interactions.
But that was my Monday. Monday was just really off to me.
Yeah, it's only Tuesday, just for the FYI, and it feels like it's Saturday.
Yeah.
Like, this has been the longest week. but hopefully not the longest episode on the planet.
Well, it might be.
It may be. You know, you never know with us because we get to talk in and, you know, it happens.
Tangents do be tangenting. Whatevs.
Well, before we get into these stories, we got to talk about Factor.
Talk about the it factor because it's got it and I want it every single serving. If you don't know what we're talking about, your taste buds are missing out. Factor is ready-to-eat meals, and it's fresh, never frozen, chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and again, ready in just 2 minutes.
That's literally my favorite part, because this is one of the weeks that I have 30-minute lunches instead of hour lunches, and those Factor meals being ready in 2 minutes instead of like going to get something or walking to the cafeteria or whatever, I literally have so much time left on my lunch break to watch something or, you know, work on my story or whatever. It leaves me with so much free time at lunch.
Well, and even like frozen meals, it's going to take at least 4, if not...
Oh, easily 6. 7 minutes.
Yeah.
But with Factor, it's literally ready in 2 minutes. And it is so freaking good. And you know what one of my favorite things is about Factor? Is that when the meal has like a sauce on it, so I had like an herb and chicken the other day that had like a cream sauce on it. They do not go easy on the sauce.
Right.
Like it is so saucy and yummy in the best way possible. Like you're not left wishing like, oh, I wish I had a little more sauce. Like it is so freaking good.
I had the turkey chili with some zucchini.
That's my meal tomorrow.
So good. So flipping good. Oh my gosh. And I'm not a big turkey fan.
Yeah.
You know, and couldn't tell. It was so good. I was like, can I have seconds? Even though like I am completely full.
Yeah.
I just wanted more.
It was
more.
So good. You wanted more? Yeah.
Yes.
This weekend I had the jalapeno cheddar chicken and it was so good. It was not too spicy because you know I can be a wuss. I did take the like large jalapenos off of it because I didn't want to eat the actual jalapeno because I'm a wuss. But it was so freaking good.
That sounds really flavorful. And I think I know what I'm going to have tomorrow. And seriously, they have something for everyone. Calorie smart, protein plus, keto.
There's vegetarian options. So the list is endless. There are over 35 different options to choose from every single week. So literally, there's nothing to stop you from doing this. Plus, there's 60 different add-ons to help you stay fueled up and feeling good all day long.
And Factor likes to say that their restaurant quality meals absolutely agree.
Oh, literally, that's so true. If I have to hear my boss say one more time that Factor is better than any restaurant he's been to, well, I mean, keep saying it because it's true. I'm not going to complain because it's really true. It's really good food. And Factor's done the math, and the math is mathin'. It is less expensive than takeout, and every meal is dietitian approved to be nutritious and delicious. So right now, if you want to try this, because why wouldn't you, head to factormeals.com/creep50 and use the code creep50 to get 50% off.
Again, that is code creep50 at factormeals.com/creep50 to get 50% off.
That's half off. I mean, y'all got to do these. These are so good. So head on over to factormeals.com/creep50 and use promo code creep50 for 50% off. Okay, so this recommendation actually came from Ashlyn on the Discord. I just like scrolled and was like, I'm going to go back. Well, I tried to go back to the beginning and I got real close, but then something happened and it all shifted and I was like, fuck it. This is as far as I'm going back. Now, just a heads up that this is actually a pretty heavy story that does involve kids. So content warning, if you need to skip this one, parts of it, the whole thing, we completely understand. And this did happen rather recently, but in some stuff, they like bleep the kids' names. But there is one kid, I'm not going to tell you their name because it's pointless. But the other two kids involved, it's readily available and the family is not like they're out and proud of their story and, you know, participate in the media stuff. So I am going to say those kids' names. Okay, picture it. March 18th, 2018. We are in Tampa, Florida. Also, this is in Riverview, Florida. That's like a suburb of Tampa, but most people associate it with Tampa, but it's anyway. But okay, in case you're new to the podcast, I went to grad school in Tampa, but I only had to go once a month for class. And one of my classmates lived in Riverview. Like I spent some time in Riverview, which is just so weird when you have a connection to a place. It just makes the story seem so real. And especially since this happened like 3 months after I graduated. So like, you know, I don't know. It's just weird.
Yeah, no, it makes it real. Also, did Riverview have a nice view of a river?
I don't fucking know.
Okay.
Okay, so in this house, you have Ronnie O'Neill, who lived with his ex-girlfriend, Kenyatta Barron. And the two of them had a 9-year-old daughter, Ronivia, who was 9, and Ronnie O'Neill the 4th, because the dad was Ronnie O'Neill the 3rd. So Ronnie O'Neill the 4th, who was 8. Kenyatta, who went by Kiki, and dad Ronnie had broken up, and he had actually moved on and had a kid with another woman. And that's the kid I'm not going to talk about or not going to say their name. But I was listening to this on a podcast called This Is Monsters. And on that podcast, this is the only place I saw this. Ronnie had actually moved back in with Kiki because he had actually been shot in a drive-by. And his family wouldn't or couldn't kind of take care of him. Like, they wouldn't take him in after that. And so Kiki was the only one that would let him live with her. Picture it. Like I said, August 18th, 2018. At 11:43, police get a 911 call from Kiki. Well, who they later figure out is Kiki. At the time, they didn't really know. But they heard someone saying that they were sorry, Ronnie, and they could hear someone in the background saying, "She killed me, don't come outside," all the things. There was a lot more, too, that they could hear in the 911 call. They could hear someone saying Allah Akbar, which means God is greater in Arabic, or God is the greatest. Thank you, Wikipedia. But then the call ended. But then, like 8 minutes later, they get another call from the same house to 911. And this time, it's a guy. And he tells police that Kenyatta, well, he calls her Kiki in the 911 call. He says that Kiki was trying to kill him and that he's also being attacked by white demons and that the kids are demons or devils too. So obviously we know that this is Ronnie and Kiki on the 911 calls. At some point you can hear Ronnie telling Kiki the kids are now mine, and you can hear him telling young Ronnie to sit down before I kill you. Police and all get dispatched to this house. And when they get there, they see a young boy start walking out, and he literally is, this is a lot, been stabbed and is like disemboweled.
Oh my gosh.
And he is smoking because there has been a fire set in the house.
What?
Now, from what I can tell, Kiki is actually on the lawn, and Ronnie had run back outside as well. And the police ended up having to tase him because he wouldn't comply with their orders. Now, at some point, somebody tells a firefighter that there's still another kid in the house. So they go in to pull Ronivia out, and they find out that Ronivia is dead.
Oh my gosh.
So this is what happened. At some point in the night, which we later find out is probably because Ronnie had converted to Islam, and was apparently the argument that night was that he wanted Kiki and the kids to convert as well. And they were arguing about she didn't want to, and it escalated. So Ronnie had gotten out the shotgun and had shot Kiki twice and was beating her with the shotgun.
When she called 911?
Yes, that's why she was calling 911, because of like the beatings and all of that were taking place. So she runs from where they're having the argument into Ranivia's room. Now, Ranivia, although she's 9, She has cerebral palsy and was able to walk some, but used a wheelchair most of the time, and also had autism spectrum disorder and was nonverbal. So Kiki runs into Ronivia's room to hide in the closet. Now, little Ronnie is seeing all of this. He's 8. He's seeing all of it. And he sees his dad go into the bedroom to continue attacking Kiki. At some point, Ronnie tells little Ronnie to start walking around the house saying Allah Akbar. And he threatens to kill him if he doesn't walk around the house saying this. So little Ronnie is literally just walking around repeating this. At some point, Kiki does call 911 and she gets out and runs out of the house. A neighbor actually watches Ronnie as he hits her like 2 or 3 times with the shotgun. And I believe he sees him shoot her, but I'm fuzzy on that detail. He goes back inside though and walks into Ronivia's room and beats her with a hatchet.
What?
Then he goes to little Ronnie and is like on top of him because he's like spreading gasoline around, trying to light it. And he's like holding little Ronnie down. Well, he gets away. So he chases him into the kitchen, gets a knife, and stabs little Ronnie.
Oh my gosh. So many times. Really deep.
Yeah.
Remember when we said that I was very anxious? This, like, my skin is crawling because I cannot, like, it's so much.
Well, so Kiki had, God bless her, she had, her right arm was broken in 2 different places. She had a gunshot wound to her left shoulder and then her right elbow. She literally was beaten to death, though. The gunshot wounds didn't kill her. It was the beatings that she received from the shotgun that is what killed her. 15 separate lacerations from the beating, multiple different abrasions, mainly to the left side of her head. She had 6 or 7 fractures of her skull, so much so that she even had teeth missing from the beating.
Oh my gosh.
He was spreading gasoline in the house and lighting it on fire. Like Ronivia's room, from what I understand, is he lit that on fire. That the firefighter like had to kind of run through to get her. The firefighter thought he was saving her. And it wasn't until he got her outside that he realized that she had been murdered. So little Ronnie is taken to the hospital in critical condition, but he does survive.
Thank gosh.
Now, the police take Ronnie into custody, and he tells them that Kenyatta is the devil and that his children are the devil and that that's why all this happened. But his story changes a lot. Now, the son, Ronnie, like I told you, he does survive, and he tells police, like, everything. He's able to give the police a full account of everything that happens. And I just think about this poor 8-year-old boy who literally just lost everything, who is scared, who is alone, who is medicated in a hospital with tubes in his arms and all the things, probably never even been in a hospital in his life. And he's literally fighting for his life. The police coming in, asking him questions. But there is a really bright side that happens. There's more to this story, but I just want to go ahead and tell you this part. So while he was in the hospital, there was a detective who just on a whim, like he wasn't really involved in the case, but he was like, I'm going to go check on that kid in the hospital. And they were talking, you know, had a lot of connections with football. And I guess Detective Blair had some connections to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So he was able to like tell him team stuff, give him some little, you know, Buccaneers type things. And they just, you know, they bonded. One night, Detective Blair went to visit him and he was about to leave. And Ronnie was like, can you just watch a movie with me?
Oh, gosh.
And so Detective Blair was supposed to have like date night with his wife. And he immediately was like, boop, boop, boop. Can we watch a movie at the hospital with this kid? And she's like, abso-fucking-lutely. And so they went up and just sat and both held his hands next to the bed and watched Power Rangers.
Oh, my gosh.
Isn't that so sweet?
That is like, there's good in the world.
Yes. So After Ronnie left the hospital, he went to live with some family. And it seems like maybe it was not a wonderful situation. And so just kind of nonchalantly, Detective Blair was like, look, you know, if you need anything, let us know, to his guardian ad litem.
That's a mouthful.
Right. Well, it wasn't long before the guardian actually did call and was like, look, this basically isn't a very good situation. I never saw anything that said what happened or why it wasn't, but it wasn't a situation that they wanted to leave Ronnie in. And they were like, you got any ideas? And they're like, we sure do. We want him.
Oh, gosh.
So they talked it over as a family because they had five kids.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And so they talked over his family and they're like, no, we absolutely want him. And so they ended up adopting Ronnie.
Oh, gosh.
And I just love, too, though, that Ronnie says that they have this family mantra that he repeats to himself if he's like feeling stressed or overwhelmed, because he has a lot of issues with PTSD and all of that. So his family mantra that he repeats to himself says, I am safe, I am loved, and I am a part of this family.
Oh, gosh.
I know. Are they not the sweetest thing ever?
Yes.
He's so freaking precious. Like, I just want to hug him. So while all this is happening, Ronnie O'Neill is actually determined not fit to stand trial. So this goes on for quite some time. And the trial doesn't actually start until 3 years later.
Gosh, this is reminding me of like zombie mommy or whatever, you know, the lady who said her kids were zombies.
Yeah.
You know, where it was just like, oh my gosh, who could do that?
Right. Ronnie has a lot of mental illness going on. And I never really saw what exactly, you know, he's diagnosed with. But I mean, like I said, it was a good while that he was in an institution and wasn't deemed fit to stand trial. Now, he later was, but he actually chose to represent himself at trial.
Oh, gosh.
So this is a capital murder trial. And he chose to represent himself, which also means that he gets to cross-examine his son.
No.
Yeah. Now, I really recommend that y'all go watch these videos on YouTube, because let me just tell y'all that I am not going to do this justice of the intensity that Ronnie O'Neill has. Like, it's a lot. And in the This Is Monsters podcast, they play clips from it, so you really get to hear it, because he's like yelling, and it's just like in his opening statements and all, it's just the most bizarre thing. And he was warned like multiple times, like, are you sure you want to do this? Like, we really don't recommend you know, represent yourself, yada yada yada, because you can never claim ineffective counsel.
Oh.
If you can't, it's part of the agreement, like, you signing it away, you cannot claim that later if you choose to do it yourself.
Yeah. I'm too lazy to want to do it myself.
Girl, preach. But he almost, like, you know when you have like a preacher that's way over the top and they'll be like, and rah-da-da-da-da, you know, like,
yes.
That's kind of how it was. Like, it was just,
that's so overwhelming.
Yeah. Oh my God. I, listening to these clips from this, was like, I don't know that I could do this as a juror, because it was a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, aside from, you know, how terrible this story is, and watching a, you know, an 11-year-old on the stand, like, I don't know if I could do it. But just seeing this spectacle of Ronnie defending himself with his opening statements and closing statements, and it just is, it's a lot. It's, y'all need to go watch these videos. But anyway. So in the opening statements, like I said, Ronnie is yelling. One of his big things is that he says that his son, Ronnie, was coached by the detective who adopted him. And it's like, no, he wasn't. That detective, like, literally hardly had anything to do with this case. So no, it wasn't.
Yeah.
Of course, we know how a trial works. The prosecution brings their people on. The defense people bring their people on. And it was like the way his whole defense was almost to say, hey, there's some other boogeyman in Tampa doing this, but like never is like, this is like, proves no evidence that there is a boogeyman.
Yeah, it just wants reasonable doubt.
Right, but it's not reasonable doubt when you're just like, there's somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the ways that he tries to prove that the police fabricated things and tampered with things, because that was his other defense point, was like, well, the police are lying. The police, like, this is all fictitious and fabricated. And like, he repeats the same words, but different. Like, he'd be like, fictitious, fabricated, fundamentally wrong. Like, you know, it's just like, what? And then like, one time he was like, there's reasonable reasons. Like, that's exactly how he says it. Like,
oh my gosh.
I'm not exaggerating at all. That's exact. But like, that is literally how he would say it. Like, in the sentence, he would say, there's like reasonable reasons for you to have reasonable doubt. Like, that would be kind of what he was saying. And he'd be like, there's reasonable reasons, like that. I'm not joking.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. So he actually called on the neighbor that saw him beat Kiki as one of his witnesses.
I don't think he knows.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
So he calls the neighbor, and the neighbor is like, yeah, I saw him like 3 or 4 times or however many times beat Kiki. And he's like, you see, they said she had been hit 15 times. He only saw me do it 3 or 4.
No.
Like, so that's his proof, though. Like, he's being like, told you that they're lying. And it's like, no, I don't think that says what you think it says.
No.
I think you're just proving their point.
Right.
But he's like, no, see, their autopsy says that she was hit 15 times, but he says only did it 3 to 4 times. So who's lying now?
Wow.
Then he says that how in the 911 call you can hear the Allah Akbar. He says that he only said it 2 times. Well, he said, I only said it once, maybe twice. And then he goes, so you know they fabricated that 911 call to make it seem like I said it 8 or 10 times because they want to make me look like a terrorist. But it's like, no, you were saying that. And we have the son, Ronnie's testimony to corroborate that you made him literally walk around and say it.
Yeah.
Then he tells that the police tased him for no reason, and then they edited their video footage to make it look like he resisted. And then, of course, like I said, he really tried to attack his son's testimony because it's literally the most damning thing.
Yeah.
And like I told you how he was like, oh, he was coached or coerced or whatever by the police and the detective. And then he's like, and he has PTSD, like, which he should because this was traumatic, but he can't remember exactly what happened.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like, he was like 8 when this happened. And yeah, I feel like it's normal after, because this trial was 3 years after. So yeah, he's not going to remember every single little detail like he did 5 hours after surgery, 12 hours after the incident.
Right.
Like, that's normal. But I think the end all be all of his defense, he really thought he had something here. He said that if the state, because again, this was a capital murder trial, so, you know, death penalty is on the table. So he says, if the state can premeditate his murder because he murdered Kiki, then he should have been able to premeditate her murder because she was trying to kill the kids.
What?
But then, like, 3 sentences later, he'll say, there was no premeditation. This was passion.
Oh, my gosh.
What the fuck?
No.
So, like I said, the son, Ronnie, did testify, but he did not have to be in court. They let him testify through a remote video, and he had his adopted mother and his therapy dog with him the whole time.
Oh, his therapy dog?
Yes.
Me. Like, no, I'm cool, but the therapy
dog? No, I really love that because to me, it just shows like how much this family has taken him in. And there's tons of pictures that the family has posted of them with him and with his dog and just like really trying to figure this life out together. And I like too that there will be pictures of him with his mom and him with his biological mom and his biological sister. and it'll still like photo credit by the Blair family. Like, so they're still sharing pictures of him and his mom and his sister. And I just think that they're really trying to keep this alive for him and remembering and accepting what happened and trying to process it and move on in a healthy way for him.
Yeah.
Because this could really have taken, and still could take, a turn for him in the way that he processes things. But I really feel like just by him having the therapy dog and just her being there with him, I don't know. I just felt like, I really hope he's getting the love and support that he needs now, because his original love and support was stolen from him.
Yeah. And I feel like they're being respectful to his family.
Yes. Yes. Like, they aren't trying to erase his mom. They're still, you know, they're not, I feel like, and I don't know, this is literally all through pictures. And I mean, you can make anything you want to look through pictures. But I really hope that what they're portraying is true for this boy.
Yeah.
So during the cross-examination, Ronnie's demeanor completely changes from like the yelling,
the over the top.
Yeah, like grandiose, like it changes. And when you look at the interview or listen to it, they start out by being like, the dad, Ronnie, is like, good to see you. And he's like, good to see you. Like, it's just like this, like, you just knowing what happened, it's like, if you just hear the words, it's like, good to see you, good to see you. You know, it's like, yeah, just like exchanging pleasantries, but yet all the trauma surrounded in those two.
How freaking strong is little Ronnie, though?
Oh, my God. And I don't know that. He does not go by little Ronnie. I just have to, that's the only way I could distinguish,
yeah,
which one I'm talking about.
Yeah.
There's lots of quotable moments from their interactions, but the part that just, like, I'm so proud of you, Ronnie, was the dad, Ronnie, says, did I hurt you that night? And he said, yes. And the dad says, I did. How did I hurt you? And he says, you stabbed me. And I just am like, go, Ronnie. Like, I'm so proud of you for standing up to him, because he was trying to minimize what happened to you and his role in it to make it seem like Kenyatta was the one that was had the white devil in her and was killing the kids. And so he had to stop her. And it's like, that ain't what happened. You did this. And I don't know. I just was so proud of this boy that I will never even know. And he did so good, even on the questions from the prosecutor. Like, one time he didn't understand what the prosecutor said, and just like how he clarified and was like, this, then yes. Like, I just was like, dang, like, I know that they get coaching and all, but I mean, he answered the question. He didn't give more or less information. He was, you know, I just was like, dang, this kid is, he's 11. Wow. You know, there's adults that can't do that. And
me.
Yes. I'm just like, what an amazing child.
No one would want me to be there. I'd be like, they'd be like, ma'am, can you stop? Well, one other thing. I was getting to the point.
They're like, you just told 7 stories in once. And they're like, well, you know, they all are important.
And how do they do? Well, Walt Disney said.
Well, I was talking to Lottie. Okay, you know, she's in. She was the one that, like, man.
Okay, this is random as fuck. But do you ever read the, like, aftercare, not sex stuff, but after, like, your doctor's visits, like, yes, the aftercare summary?
Yes.
Okay. So the cardiologist said, I was like, he was so nice. He was so.
Oh, he did you dirty?
He said I was very pleasant.
Oh, yeah. They always say that.
Is that a thing?
Yeah. They'll say a pleasant 38-year-old female, okay, that blah, like, blah, blah.
I was like, did he think I was pleasant?
No, they always say that.
Fuck. But he didn't do me dirty.
Okay. Yeah. They always say that. Unless you're not pleasant. And then they say unpleasant or asshole. No. So the trial lasted a week, and it only took the jury 4.5 hours to find him guilty on 2 counts of first-degree murder and the attempted murder of Ronnie. Then they found him guilty for the arson. And at first, you know, it goes to like the sentencing phase after that. And it seemed like the jury was pretty split on the death penalty. So they ended up doing life in prison. And I think he got 3 life sentences in prison plus a 90-year sentence for setting the fire, all to be served consecutively. So he ain't ever seen the light of day. But I just really hope that his son, Ronnie, is thriving and getting the help that he needs to work through the awful trauma that he went through.
Lost his mom, his sister, lost his dad.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, just lost his freaking innocence. And you know what I'm thinking too is that Big Ronnie said, like, you have to say this or I'm going to kill you. And so all I can see is little Ronnie running around saying this, doing what he was told, and then still being attacked and, you know, tried to be killed. Like, I don't know. That's just so hard. Like, he was doing everything right.
This is too just one of those stories that, because of all the antics with the trial and all, you really lose the fact that Ranivia and Kenyatta lost their lives and that Ronnie's life was almost lost and then completely and forever changed.
Yeah.
Because it does. You lose it all in the antics of the dad, Ronnie. And it's just not fair.
Yeah. Well, that was a roller coaster.
And it's like, there's so much that happened so early in the story because there's not a lot to it. Like, they did try to say that Ronnie had been abused, like sexually assaulted as a child that was never dealt with. So like, oh, that's why he did this. And it's like, no, but that's really all we know about their previous lives. It really just jumps right into the awful murders.
Yeah.
And there's so much going on when it happens that it's hard to tell it all consecutively without giving things away of like, okay, so in his testimony, he said that, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. There's just so much because it's like you want to tell what's happening to Kenyatta. And it's like, oh, by the way, he also started the fire. Well, also this happened to Ranivia. And oh, this, you know, it's like, it's just, this one was hard for me to kind of put the pieces together in a like chronological order that made sense. I just felt like the beginning was like a word salad.
Yeah. Extra ranch, please.
For sure. And I'll take your tomato.
Yeah. Though I am getting better about eating tomatoes. Well, I too did a suggestion.
Copycat.
And this is from Stephanie B in the Facebook group. Now, she actually has a double last name, and I never know how to shorten those, like for the initials. So I just used the last hyphenated initial because that's what you told me to do before.
Now, today, Carrie's like, you say both.
Oh my God. I swear to God.
Like, legitimately, I was literally about to look at you and go, say both.
You said do
I know. Last. This is why you can't listen to me because I will change my mind.
Because I was like, I don't know. Well, if we're going to say both, it's Stephanie E-B, I believe. But anyway, so I have Stephanie B. So she said that she's a pretty big skeptic. So she leans more towards Carrie. But this story does scare her, mainly because there was so much evidence. So get your strap on. Strap in, because it's a doozy.
Get my strap on?
Yeah. Okay, picture it. Brentwood, Pennsylvania, 1988. Bob Cranmer had grown up in Brentwood, which is a small borough about 6 miles from downtown Pittsburgh. When he had grown older, he joined the Army, and then later on, he left the Army to pursue politics. He actually became the first Republican majority county commissioner, and that was since Roosevelt administration. Now, I want to say I don't know shit about his politics, so I don't agree or disagree. I have no idea. But there are some things that give me, like, pause, and I give him the side eye. Like, I channel my inner Marley, and it's major side eye. But we'll get into that later. So anyway, Bob and Lisa, his wife, and their kids were living in New Jersey at the time. So 1987 going into 1988. The kids were Jessica, who was 4, Bobby Jr., who was 3, David, who was 2, and Charles, who was an itty-bitty baby at 2 months old.
They had 4 kids under the age of 4?
Yeah.
That sounds fucking terrible.
Now, they were happy in New Jersey, but Bob was presented with a promotion at his job, and he did want to be closer to family again. Now, honestly, they weren't sure if they were going to be moving back to Brentwood exactly, but Bob's mom was like, your house is on the market. and Bob instantly knew what his mom was talking about and couldn't believe it. The home she was referring to is 3406 Brownsville Road. It's a gorgeous Victorian-style home, like a manor. Not quite a mansion, but a manor.
Yeah, because I know the difference.
Same, right? Bob was so in love with it when he was younger, and he was just always drawn to that house. It was never something that he thought would be in his price range, and honestly, he never thought it would be on the market. It's one of those houses that would be passed down generation to generation.
Still, I don't understand.
Same. But hearing that it was on the market, Bob jumped at the chance to, one, tour the house, two, potentially buy this house. Because, you know, at the time, Zillow wasn't a thing.
Right.
So you couldn't just creep on people's houses and shit like that. So, yeah, you had to go in. And I do love an open house. So I think it was all of them, not two-year-old little baby Charles, but I know it was Bob, Lisa, and Bobby Jr. who went and toured the house. And I think Jessica was there, but she was just in the background if she was, okay? Now, this tour wasn't without its strangeness. You know, at one point, Bob had asked if there was anything wrong with the house, and the man, McHenry was their names, like their last name. He was like, oh no, we've had mass here several times.
Mass?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And Bob was like, oh, okay. And he did mean, is anything weird? Because he asked this after some stuff happened, but the guy knew exactly what he was talking about. Like, he wasn't like, yeah, there's a leaky pipe. The furnace is whatever. It's like, yeah, we've had mass here several times.
Yeah. That's not what you jump to. You're not like, yeah, a priest came over yesterday. Nothing happened.
Yeah.
Crucifixes all stayed on the wall.
Right. But, you know, he was like, okay, well, it's been blessed. Okay, cool. He grew up in a Catholic home, so he's like, oh, well, they're like Irish Catholic. They're like super devout, you know, cool, cool, cool. Awesome. That means it's only better for us then. All right. But at one point, while they're looking at the house, they are going down to the basement, and Bobby Jr. got separated from them, and they didn't notice until they heard him crying. The owner seemed more fearful of Bobby Jr. being alone in their house, and the wife of the couple like ran up to him and was like, are you okay? Are you okay? What happened? Did you see anything?
Huh.
And they both thought that was kind of weird, but they dismissed it because, okay, like, I mean, he's a kid. He might have thought he saw something, or like maybe, you know, they have something that wouldn't be kid friendly in their house. Who knows?
But like, why is that your go-to?
Right. Well, Lisa did say that she thought the house was too big, too many repairs, and she kind of got an odd feeling there. But Bob pushed for this house. It was something he wanted his entire life. And so Lisa conceded because ultimately it's a beautiful home. And yeah, there's repairs and all of that, but then it's just like, wow, okay, well, put in a low offer, see if they take it. And they did. So Bob and Lisa were like, well, this is a fucking steal. Like, okay, maybe it's too big for us, but one, we have a lot of fucking kids and they're only going to get bigger. So,
oh, real.
Yeah. So yeah, they were like, all right, this is happening quickly. This is happening. And the McHenrys were like, yeah, we have to leave for work. Like, we're relocating. And Bob could certainly understand that because at the time he wasn't in politics just yet. That was his goal. But he had left the army, started working for AT&T, and had moved up in that corporation. So he's like, yeah, I totally get that. We're leaving New Jersey for this job. And so that was that. The Cranmer family packed up and headed to Brentwood. Bob's childhood dream house. That would be, you know what I'm going to say, their worst nightmare.
Did not know that was what you're going to say.
I always say that. Like, their dream house turned in to their worst nightmare. And little did they know that they were moving into a house that would lead them to be synonymous with the demon of Brownsville Road. So this story is pretty well known. It's been on Unsolved Mysteries, Paranormal Witness, and Bob wrote a book called The Demon of Brownsville Road. He's also done a lot of interviews, and one I listened to was on the podcast called The Grave Talks. And this is where one of those little side-eye moments come in for me, because Bob was talking about the house and just like how historical and how grand it is. He's like, you know, 10-foot ceilings, balconies, chandeliers, very extravagant. So like he's painting this picture, and then he was like, you know, it's from like the 1800s and how much he loved history, and the house just reeked with history. And this one part that he really loved was that when you went into the dining room, there was a servant bell in the dining room and they had a servant staircase. And that just reminded him of the grandeur of those days.
That's disgusting.
Like, sir, what? Say less. Like,
you, yeah. Tell us how you feel about people of color without telling us how you feel about people of color.
I mean, I was just like, I mean, I get that that is part of the history of the house and that is the thing. But don't...
That's your favorite part,
yeah, though? Don't say, like, you know what? It made me really think of the grander times back when...
We could, like, ring-a-ding-ding for everything to be brought to us.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I was just like, You know, like, in your story where you're like, I don't think it's saying what you think it's saying.
Yes.
And so I don't know if he really meant it like that, but...
He did.
Like, that was just... I was like, side-eye.
I mean, do we sometimes say things in ways that are stupid? Yes. I mean, Exhibit A, the beginning of this fucking episode, I had to clarify something. But that?
Right. The whole, if you wanted to point that out, I feel like it'd be like, it just reminded me of like how far we've come or, you know, like whatever. But he was saying it like, those were the best days of the
yonder year.
Yeah. And it's like, no.
Yeah.
No. Anyway, so moving on from that, the whole family moved in and they were getting adjusted to the new place, but there was something odd about it. Lisa could never put her finger on it and Bob was oblivious. But there was one thing he did notice, and this was in the coat closet that was like basically underneath the main staircase.
So for the servants?
Right.
That, I mean, that's the only thing he's going to notice.
Well, the reason why he noticed this is because that's where he kept his coats. And there was a light that had a string on it, like a cord.
Yeah.
And you would pull it to turn it on. And I used to have one with a really long string on it because, you know, I'm an extra large. Mm-hmm. Well, I got T-Rex arms, but I'm also an extra large pizza. And so, like, I had to have the light on before I was going to bed, but I didn't want to get back up to turn the light off, so I would just have a long cord.
Oh, okay. I was like, what does that have to do with being extra large pizza, but I get because you didn't want to get back up.
Got yeah, it. Lazy.
I was like, not all extra large pizza are lazy. Let's not perpetuate that stereotype, ma'am.
Well, I'm just saying that is why I am, because I was like, no. And also, just to even drive it further home, I would use my leg. And
I swear to God, I was like, if you tell me that you use your toes.
I did.
God damn.
I used to do everything with my toes.
Can you move on, please? Can we continue with this story?
I would pull my cover up with my toes. Now I can't bend that way.
God almighty.
Okay, so he noticed that the string was never hanging down. So, you know, it's like he went in to pull the string. It's not there. So he's like, what the fuck? And it was wrapped around the light. So he's like, all right, whatever. You know, uncoils it, does his little thing, no harm, no foul. But every time he would go to return his coat from the day, because it was like in December when they moved in, the chain would again be wrapped around the light. So, of course, he blamed it on Lisa because her vacuum cleaner was also in that coat closet. And he was like, don't yank it and it won't wrap itself around. Like, you're yanking it too hard. And Lisa was like, okay, thanks. I know I'm not to pull hard on it like that. And I wouldn't leave it like that if it did happen.
I hate him.
There is something about him that I don't like either. And I'm like, I don't need to be this way, but I don't know. It's just how he says certain things.
The fact that he went straight to blaming her because her vacuum was in there, it's just the ick. Like, it's just the ick.
Well, and I will say that there's like no one else he could blame it on because their oldest child was 4 at the time. So, you know, like there's no step stool around, like, and it would happen so frequently But the whole thing is just like, oh, it couldn't have been you who actually yanked it hard or like hit it with your coat when you're coming out. Cause like those are flimsy anyway.
Right. Yeah. It's just the ick for me.
Yeah. Well, things kept happening, like lights flicking on and off at odd times. There would be doors that would open and close by themselves. And there were, of course, like phantom knocks coming from doors, scratching on walls. And most of the stuff you could write off as it being a freaking old house, bad wiring. But after months upon months, it began to wear on them. And honestly, even he thought like, okay, the house is haunted, but no harm, no foul. Like, we're all like living in kumbaya over here. You do your thing, but like, don't let us see you. Don't, you know, all the things. Like, you make your little phantom noises, but it's all cool. But then Lisa had taken down some wallpaper in one of the rooms, and she found this sentence, and it said, "This is our home," in someone's handwriting on the wall. And she was like, oh, maybe someone did something when they were like renovating it before, or like when they were building it, someone put it in. Because, you know, people write their names, Bible verses, all the things on like the,
yeah,
the foundation of your house and like all of that. And if you just think about it, like, this is our home, that doesn't mean it's sinister. That could be like, this is our home, like our first home, like this is it. You know, it could be sweet. But Lisa went on to find other weird shit going on around the house. Twice, she stepped in some type of gooey puddle. And she said that she didn't know where it came from. And it was something that she couldn't figure out where it could have came from, what it was. It would just randomly show up in the hallway once there, and then in the bathroom another time. And she said it had like an old musty smell, but other than that, no distinguishable scent. It was just, ugh, you yeah. know? So Bobby Jr. was in fourth or fifth grade, and he said that he was in his room and he saw his mom and his siblings backing out of the driveway because he was homesick. Now, about that time, he heard something weird. And he felt like something was coming toward his room, and it began to overwhelm him. And that's when he saw something whiz past his door. And he said it looked like it was a person in like a cloak. And he did what any other kid or person would do, jumped in bed, pulled the covers up over his head for safety. And he said all of a sudden, his covers were ripped out of his hand, and there above him was this figure. And it was very bright, like someone had just turned on a light bulb. He closed his eyes and screamed bloody murder. And when he finally opened his eyes again, everything was back to normal. So he kept this experience secret from his family because he was like, did that really happen? Did I imagine it? Like, was it a fever dream? Like, I am sick. Like, what's going on? Also, looking back, people said like, maybe the black figure was evil, but then that light bulb looking like the bright spirit was like the protector and it was over him. And then, you know, like obviously it was still scary because what the fuck?
Yeah.
But it could have been like a protection thing. The thing is, Bobby Jr. was, you know, trying to keep quiet about this. And this really happened for a while. Like they have been in this house. Over like 1988 is when they moved in. And this still happens, like, I mean, to this day, but it like 2003, 2016, like it's still like they lived there. They have lived a life there. So when I'm saying like, okay, the next day this happened, also you have to know that they've done this for like months and months and years. So it's just kind of like, compounded on each other, you know?
Well, when you say anything in like a short enough span, it seems so like minute, but when you're living it day in and day out, whether you believe it or not, whether you're living it day in and day out, it takes a toll on you.
Yeah. Well, Bobby Jr. started sleeping in his closet, and Lisa went to wake him up one day and found him in his closet. They were like, okay, like, we'll just do what we need to do. Like, we'll move a mattress in there, like, whatever he needs to do. But then it was even like it was just too much and he didn't even want to stay in the room. Well, when Lisa brought it up to Bob, he was just like, he's practically a teenager now. He's just moody. You know how teenagers are. Again, a side eye, but whatevs. So then Lisa was home by herself later that week. And this really was later that week. And she heard heavy footsteps coming up the foyer. So she was like, huh, who's there? Like, I'm all alone. And she heard a loud thump, like the thud of the boots or something on the stairs. So she went up to see because, again, home alone, who is up there? So she went up the stairs to see who was there. She saw Bobby Jr.'s bedroom door closed, and she knew it was open when they left for school earlier that day. So she looked inside, nothing was there. So she closed the door back, and by the time that she had gotten to the stairs again, she heard it creak open again. But she couldn't think about that because right that moment, she said it felt like something hit her ankles and it knocked her feet out from underneath her, and she tumbled down the stairs.
Oh my God.
Now, luckily, she wasn't like severely injured or anything like that. But that day, she decided that Bobby was moving out of that room. And another side eye moment from Bob was like, okay, well, we'll move in it and I'll show you there's nothing to be scared of, you know? So it's like, oh, okay. And I will say that I saw that somewhere, and then another person had said that they were renovating another room, but it's like, okay, so they moved in there while they're renovating that room, then move Bobby into another room. Like, I don't know. In A Paranormal Witness, he seemed like he was like, I'll show you how to toughen it out.
Yeah.
So whichever way, he didn't believe Bobby Jr., and so they moved into the room. Well, shit would go on in the basement, too. So it was like Bobby Jr.'s room, which they called the blue room because of blue carpet and blue paint. And the basement had the most activity. You know, they would hear the knocking sounds. And there was always this chair in the basement that would be moved. And it would be moved kind of in like the middle of the room close to the furnace down there. And they said it was like someone was trying to sit there and stay warm. So later on one day, Bob was doing some gardening and he found some buried treasure. So naturally, he opened it up. And now it wasn't like a treasure chest or anything. It was a metal box, something that you would put jewelry in or like a time capsule in. And when he opened it, he saw a lot of religious items like rosary, pendant, stuff like that. And so he called the previous owner and he was like, hey, I found this. Do you want it back? And the owner was like, no, no, it needs to stay with the house. Everything's fine, but like, just put it back now, like right now. And so he did. He was like, okay, what else? But there was a point where Bob was talking to his mom about it. And she was, again, a devout Catholic. And she was like, we're just going to have the priest come bless your home. You're saying, you know, things are going kind of weird. Like there's a lot of noises. Like Bobby Jr. is scared of his room. Like, we'll just have a priest bless the home. And Bob was like, okay, couldn't hurt, whatever. But we know that sometimes that just riles spirits up even more. One thing that happened was shortly after they moved into Bobby Jr.'s room, Lisa began to change. Kind of how Bobby Jr. was before, very moody, very lethargic. Lisa said that she was physically and mentally drained. She was not able to function. And like I said, this activity had been going on for years. So their daughter, Jessica, had moved out and ended up returning to stay with them. So she was 20 years old at this point.
They've been in that house a long time.
A long time. And she had a son. And even with their grandchild home, Lisa just couldn't be bothered to be active anymore. You know, she was withdrawn. Another side eye. And I think it's just because I don't have a good feeling about him. Bob, of course, the thing he thought was going on, do you know what it was?
Menopause?
No, that would have been worse. She was having an affair.
Oh, my God.
So he looked in the closet to see what he could find, like love letters or, you know, whatever. He did find something. He found unpaid bills, collections, past due notices.
Yee.
And so obviously, you know, Lisa wasn't on top of her wifely duties.
Yeah.
And this is what I've put. I don't know why I don't love him, but it's just something that rubs me wrong with that.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing that is wrong with people having different responsibilities in relationships. It's just that, like, when he found this and had no idea and then blew up at her about this.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I'm just like, oh, God. But that's when Lisa begged Bob to do something about the house. She was like, something is here. We have been telling you this. You're saying it might just be a spirit, but like something is wrong. So obviously Bob thought she was losing her mind because what the fuck is she talking about? The house wasn't making her not pay bills and all of that. But before he could really settle on Lisa having like a little minty bee, he heard what sounded like pounding on the basement wall. So he was like, what the fuck is going down there? Hold on. So he went to see, and he said he was overwhelmed with a terrible smell in the basement. He could feel some type of dark presence down there, but nothing was there.
Oh, now that he can feel it.
So all of a sudden, he said he saw a dark figure whoosh past him, and then there was just silence. So I think the worst part of this for Bob was that he had to go and admit that Lisa was right. But they decided not to tell the children in order to protect them from it. Like, oh, well, maybe they won't be so scared if they know, like, we're not seeing anything, you know, whatevs. But little do they know, you know, the kids have been seeing this and being so affected. And it's like, maybe, Bob, if you weren't so, like, single-minded, like, he was all about his political aspirations then and, you know, doing all of that. Like, and also, I think it was Bobby Jr. Like, at one point, they're just like, wears all black, has black, blah. And it's like, okay, so they dress goth. So obviously, it just had to be, I don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, it was just so, ugh. Now, they did move out of Bobby Jr.'s room and Lisa instantly felt better. Now, a few months later, it was dinner time. They were like us, always sitting down at a certain time and like, let's eat. Now, theirs was at 6 and, you know, ours would love to be at 5.
Facts. Yes.
Like, we're ours, like, is at 5:45.
Or 5:30. Just depends on if we both get off of work on time.
Yeah. But we would love it to be at 5. But Jessica and Colin, her son, were still upstairs in her room. And I just feel like, because he's still like a toddler and stuff, so maybe he had had an accident or whatever. So they were like up there cleaning up, doing the thing. And she's like hollered down and was like, hey, I'm going to let Colin come down the stairs, sending him down there to y'all. And they're like, okay, cool, cool, cool. And so, you know, they're just kind of being cautious of him going down the stairs because he was still a toddler. So he's walking like Bambi. All of a sudden, Colin started screaming and just yelling at the top of his lungs. And Bob said his eyes were as wide as saucers. He said that Colin said that there was a man in black and then it was gone. So that was a last straw for Bob, which again, a little side eye because shit like that had been happening to your kids. And it was like, it's okay. It's nothing. No one. Lisa's like, this house is killing me. It's like, no, it's not.
Right.
But then the grandchild, it's like, oh, wait, hold on. He even got them another place. And so Jessica and Colin moved out. He was like, it's not safe for him here. And I'm like, wait, you have forced your kids to grow up in this house. Like, she is now 20 years old.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's progressively gotten worse, but it was still an uneasy house to grow up in.
Yeah. And then your wife literally was miserable living in the bedroom that you're like, it's fine.
Yeah. But honestly, it seemed like it wasn't safe for any of them. Another time, Bobby Jr. was homesick from school because apparently he's us. He was laying in his bed and he was startled by this sound like a pop. And all I could think about, it was like something, you know, those guns that like those cap guns, something like that. And it wasn't like something being dropped. It was like that gun with like the, and then like the air part of it.
Yeah.
And about that time, something hit the wall right above him. And it was a CD. And it had been flung across the room so hard that it made that sound and smashed into several pieces. And I don't know if you are like me, but CDs were hard to bend and stuff. Like,
right.
When you tried to break them, it would just like do a little crease. You know what I'm like?
Yes.
Wait, what? So for it to have smashed, it's like shit, that had some force to it. And Bob was like, wait, if that actually hit Bobby Jr., like, he would have been severely injured if that's all it would happen, you know? Now, throughout this whole time, like I said, Lisa and one of their other children, not Bobby Jr., I don't know, they didn't say which one, honestly, but they ended up having to be, like, institutionalized for, like, a couple of weeks at a time. But they both, you know, recovered and returned home. But it was a lot. And so I can only imagine, like, the anxiety I feel in just my daily life and them having no safe space, you know, no space to just kind of, like, breathe on top of everything else that they're experiencing. You know, like, there's just nowhere to turn. Now, there was another thing that happened. And one night in 2003, when we graduated high school, Bobby Jr. attacked Bob. And it was like Bobby Jr. was coming down the stairs, I think, and Bob was there, and Bobby Jr. was just like, and I, oop, and like hit him. And
oh my
stuff.
God.
And it was like, he couldn't, it was like the intrusive thought won.
Yeah.
You know, and then of course they got in a fight. And now one thing said that Bobby Jr. was arrested, like the cops were called and he was arrested. But then another thing said that Bob was arrested. So I don't know, because it was like, well, is it Bob or is it, or whatever, you know, he went by. Like, it's so hard when it's just like in one article, or it's like Wikipedia had it and was like, and Bob Jr. attacked Bob and he went to jail. Which who?
Right. Which is why, even though I don't know that Ronnie went by Little Ronnie, that was the best way that I could distinguish in my story.
Yeah.
Because the older Ronnie wasn't even like Ronnie Sr. because he was the third, and the younger one was the fourth. You
right.
know, I guess I could have said third and fourth.
But I get it. Like, they're more than a number of that. So that night, you know, the whole thing went down. The next morning, they found Bob's aunt, who had moved in with them. She was found dead in her bed of natural causes, and she was elderly. But it was just like, all of that shit went down that night, apparently, you know? Now, again, there weren't charges pressed against Bobby Jr. or Bob, whoever was arrested, so they were free to return home. But the family believed that Bobby Jr. had become possessed by something. But again, he was wearing like the black and all of that, so that just like added to it for them. Now, another side-eye moment is that Bob talks about how close he was with the mayor of Pittsburgh.
Oh.
Because, you know, he
is a name dropper, a politician?
Yes. Well, and like, because he's like, and because the
society for the elite who have the servant quarters. Nice.
I don't know what accent that was, but okay.
It's you, because you've never heard rich people talk.
Damn.
Facts.
He turned to the mayor of Pittsburgh for help because he's his friend, and he was like, and then I didn't know, like, what do you do? Like, who do you look up? What do you, whatever. So the mayor reached out to the local Catholic church or the archdiocese. Now, on the Grave Talks interview, he said, and this is that side-eye moment, it's like the interviews where he's, like, candid. It's where the side-eye really comes in for me. But he said because basically of his notoriety.
Oh, gross.
And the mayor vouching for him.
Gross.
They knew he wasn't a kook.
Gross.
Yes. And I was like, okay. So because of his hookup, there is a Father Ron Langwin who called and spoke to Bob. Now, Father Ron would just talk to him over the phone, but he knew the layout of the house and he knew shit that he couldn't possibly know without being inside, but he did. Now, Father Ron also could only assist over the phone. Because he was like, no, my presence would only harm. Like, it would do more harm than good for me to go in there and whatever we're fighting against, like, feel this and all of that. So, like, I'll help you from afar. So, basically, Father Ron was like, look, you move or you stay and fight. And so they're like, no, we've been here for so long. Like, we're going to stay and fight. And by they, I mean Bob really said that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it is what it is. Now, remember, Bob loved history and that bell, and he hired a researcher to look into the house because he was like, something has got to be tied to the history of this place. And he found out that there was a pediatrician who had a practice out of the house, and he would deliver babies and stuff like that, which Lisa was like, oh my God, that gookiness that I've stepped in, that I've smelled, that was like afterbirth.
What?
I don't know why I said it like that, but afterbirth.
I didn't know she said anything weird other than the fact that I've never thought I'd hear you say the words afterbirth.
Never want to say them again. Obviously, I didn't know how to say it right. The was very hard.
Look, in the moment of like childbirth, afterbirth is not gross, but to smell ghost afterbirth is disgusting.
To step in it when you're just
clumsy already?
Yes. Like, I don't want to step in it. Like, that's fine that it's a biological thing.
Yes. No, we're not shaming afterbirth. We're shaming ghost afterbirth.
Yeah.
That's slippery.
Well, it's like anytime that something is down that I didn't put down and that I didn't know was down and I'm going to fucking slip in it.
Uh-uh.
Mm-mm. That's also why I don't like socks, but walking in socks and getting them wet will send me over the fucking edge.
Yes, but also, weirdly enough, I kind of like the sensation of stepping in a hot bath with a sock on.
What the fuck?
It's a very specific, like, it's what I picture, like, I don't know. It's a very, like...
When have you done that?
Oddly weird times as a child. But I'm just saying, it's a weird, kind of enjoyable sensation.
What? No. Things I never thought I would hear you say.
It's terrible, but I like it.
Oh my God. Okay. Is anyone like Carrie? Because I feel like no. A wet sock?
I'm just saying.
So they found out that one, their best friend likes something that's completely strange, and I haven't known that for 30 something years. But they also found out that the pediatrician wasn't just delivering babies. He was also performing illegal abortions. And the blue room where Bobby Jr. had stayed was his illegal clinic.
Oh.
Now, Father Ron told Bob that there was a place that wasn't part of any room, but it had something that would reveal more to them. And do you know the first thing that Bob thought of?
Well, the servant's quarters.
No. The closet. That damn closet.
Gross, even saying, oh, I don't think we're supposed to say servant's quarters.
No, I don't know.
Y'all tell us what you're supposed to say, but I feel like that's definitely what Bob would have said.
1,000%.
I mean, me too, because I don't know what to say. So y'all tell me.
Yeah. I only know what they say, like, on the tours of the antebellum homes and shit. And that's what they say, you know, or worse. But okay, so Bob did the whole, like, basically, here's Johnny thing and, like, broke through the back wall of this closet. Because it was like a fucking riddle. Like, there's a space that's not part of a room, but it holds something inside. You know? Like,
yeah.
Okay. But he did find, like, a bird skeleton and an old piece of paper that was crumbled. Like, not just, like, a neatly fold. Like, it was crumbled. And when he opened the paper, he saw a dark figure. It was a creature with long horns that had a head like an ox. And it had something about a sacrifice. Now, Bob said a sacrificial font. And I was like, I don't know what that is.
Sans serif.
Like, should we go on defont.com and say sacrificial font? Kind of scared what it would pull up. But I was like, I mean, I get what you're saying, but like, okay. About the sacrifice, like, they were like, the two, Bob and Father Ron, were like, sacrifice. They took the aborted babies and they burned them in the furnace as a sacrifice. And it...
Who?
The pediatrician.
Who was he sacrificing them for?
Well, I'm going to tell you, ma'am. They said that they believed that from the things they found and all of that, that the doctor who lived there had been a follower of an old god of the Canaanites. And that god's name was Moloch. They said it differently each time. and they would sacrifice babies to him. And if they didn't have babies, they would buy poor children and sacrifice. And when they were looking this up, because they're like, okay, that creature looked like what was on the paper. So it was like, wait, so this is why he was doing it. Like, that's why he was risking everything, is because he was basically getting this free sacrifice. And also it kind of tied into why the basement was so bad and that furnace was so bad, which all I can think about was Home Alone, that damn furnace.
Yes.
But anyway. So that night, after they had the house blessed again, and they had a lot of blessings, Bobby Jr. screamed and alerted his parents, like, please come up here. Something is happening. Something is weird. And it was some kind of liquid that looked like blood dripping down the walls upstairs. And remember, they had extremely high ceilings. So this was starting like at the top. So they were like, how is this happening? It's not coming from the ceiling. It's literally like just appearing on the walls and dripping down. Now, they took pictures of it, and this happened a few times where they would see the blood dripping down the walls. Sometimes it was more reddish brown, but others it was like red. Now, everyone was experiencing night terrors, and that had been happening on and off throughout the years. But Bobby Jr. seemed to be the most impacted by them. He recalls waking up in the middle of the night. He couldn't move, and then something grabbed him at his feet, pulled him out of bed, and dragged him into the hallway, and then just vanished. So he's like, wait, is this real? You know, it was so hard for him because it's like, well, I could have dreamt that and then, like, you know, walked in my sleep or whatever, because I couldn't think of the right term, like the verb of sleepwalked or sleep. I don't know. So he walked in his sleep. You know, he could have done that. Who knows? But also he was like, or was that really like a ghost that attacked me? What's going on? Well, he kind of got his answer because Bob and Bobby Jr. would wake up with bite marks on them, would have scratches all over their bodies. And now the others also were affected, but it seemed like whatever was attacking the family had laser focus on Bob and Bobby Jr. Finally, Father Ron was like, all right, there's no other option than an exorcism. Like, you've literally done like the step therapy to this, and now you're here. So another priest, James LaBarre, showed up and he's performing the exorcism. You know, they focus their energy downstairs in the basement and in Bobby Jr.'s old room. And they said that while they were doing the prayers, they heard this really loud banging coming from the furnace. And it was radiating heat like it had never done before. Like, it was so hot. And the priest told everyone to join in on the prayers and, you know, just like all the things. And so finally, after what seemed like hours, the house just became calm. And they were so thankful for the normalcy, you know, but Father Ron was like, look, this chapter is closed, but that doesn't mean the whole book is. Like, you have to be diligent about protecting your home. So Bob really does do the daily prayers. He has like the rosary around. He has like Monday prayers, Tuesday prayers, Wednesday and Thursday, you know, that kind of like he is very diligent about it. He will have the home blessed, things like that. Now, Bob also did a little bit more research and he discovered there was this old letter in the archives and it said that there was a woman who lived there in the house and her three children, and they had been attacked. And I think it was by Native Americans in this whole thing. And Bob was like, wait, they're supposed to be buried in this yard. Like, I didn't know that. And so he ended up getting some like ground penetrating radar company, and they scanned and they found that there was like a mass kind of grave area. And it looked like there were four bodies buried there. And throughout, they had different experiences where they would hear like women yelling. And so they were like the abortions or giving birth or, you know, all of that. They also said like, you know, they would see what they now think was the doctor at certain points. And so they had different spirits, but all together, they were like, no, it was a culmination of that, that like was from this demon. And it was a demonic entity. It wasn't just like the people who had lived in this house or whatever. It was like from the earth, all of that. Bob Cranmer still, you know, does a lot of interviews. And again, like I said, he wrote that book. But in March 2015, his son David died. And I do believe it was by suicide.
Oh.
And then his wife, Lisa, also fell back into a deep depression. And they ended up getting divorced in 2018 after being married for 37 years.
Gosh, that is awful.
Yeah. But Bob still has the house and he's turned it into a bed and breakfast type thing. I want to know, would you stay there or are you afraid of the demon of Brownsville Road?
Fuck no, I wouldn't stay there. I'm not fucking with a demon. Uh-uh. We don't fuck with demons. I don't know if it's real, but I'm not about to play.
Right. Also, I feel like it's so fitting. And again, like all jokes aside about the side eye and stuff, like I don't know Bob. He doesn't know me. But I just think it's so fitting that he was so drawn to this house and so consumed by this house. And now it's just him and that house. You know, it's like it drove everyone else away and he's just still in that house alone now.
Sad.
It is.
Well, and I feel sorry for, I mean, look, y'all know I am the more skeptic, but I really have tried to be not as much of a skeptic and to just be like, okay, these are their stories and whether I believe or not that it's happening in their world, it's real. So
yeah.
But the fact that his wife and all was just so affected by everything that her mental health suffered, and obviously his son too, that their mental health suffered in the ways that it did, like that is just heartbreaking. Because both of our stories dealt with a lot of mental health issues.
They really did.
And it was father and son with the same names.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Did you just put that together after I had already talked about... After you couldn't, okay.
Yeah. No, I know, like, what they did, but, like, just the theme. Like, we always say, like, the sinister sightings have a theme, but this did, too, and we did not plan it.
Well, would you stay there? You didn't answer. I'm working on getting better at reciprocating the questions.
Thank you. Thank you. 5 years later, and now she's a co-host.
Well, just a decent human, really, because I don't do it in my everyday life, either.
Oh, gosh. I don't think so, but I think it's more because I don't know about Bob.
Oh, I think, how old is he? I mean, eventually people have to learn and we have to hold him to today's standards. But I think some of that is just that he is who he is as far as like culture and, you know, I mean, yes, that people can learn and grow, but they don't usually.
I know, but they should.
No, I know.
So that doesn't give people a pass. But I don't know. It's just something about him that I don't love. And maybe it's just because he really has done a lot of interviews and a lot of, you know, so it's just like, I just saw a lot of him watching these things. And
do you think it would have been that bad had he not found that treasure of things that he opened and if he would just left him alone?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, was it like a tulpa?
No, it wasn't a tulpa.
Is that a tulpa? What's a tulpa?
Tulpa is when a thought form.
Oh, okay. A Dimmick douche box.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But no, because that was really like, well, all I have this for is from Ghost in the Burbs. But like when they plant the like, on the four corners of the property that, like it was more protection.
Gotcha.
But I mean, anything like, I mean, they did do renovations. They, you know, he did unearth that. And like, who knows what happened? I just feel like he had political aspirations and all of that. And so I think that had a lot to do with like the stress and everything. And like, he's like sweeping things under the rug. Cause he's like, it's not that bad. It's great. Like we're going to live here. Right. And like, this is the house of my dreams. Like, and I can finally afford this house.
Yeah.
And you know, like it was just a lot tied into that. And I do understand, totally understand that. I think just maybe cause like the previous owners were like, yeah, we never really felt anything. But they said that they were acting weird and stuff. So who knows? But even then, it's like, it doesn't matter that if it could have been dormant for forever, but then me and you come in and we collide and we're like bickering all the time,
right,
and doing all the thing. It's like, it awakens that energy. Like, it's like, oh shit. Okay.
Yep.
You know, so like, if it is that where he is super stressed at his job and he has these aspirations and, you know, like he's got fucking 4 kids and
under the age of 4.
Yeah. Like, it's just a lot. So I feel like whatever it was, it could have just been a lot of fucking emotion in that house. And maybe Lisa never wanted that house. And then she felt like she had to do it for Bob.
Yeah, she was trapped.
You know, so I don't know. I do know no matter how long I stayed in that house and everything, once I had cleared it, because I don't want to just leave it for someone else to have. And I don't have money to go buy another house and keep that one, you know. But once it was cleansed and stuff, I think I would have left. Just because it's like, there's so much baggage in that house.
But left and done what? Because you just said like you wouldn't have been able to afford another house.
I mean, sell it.
Oh, after you cleansed it?
Yeah. Like, I wouldn't sell it. Like, well, there's a demon in the basement. This, you know, like, I couldn't in good faith.
But you're still giving them your problem.
I mean, that's true. But, like, it's got a Band-Aid over it. Like, here's Father Ron's number. Call him. Oh, I forgot to tell you about this. Remember how Father Ron was only over the phone and he's like, I can't come. My presence would be too much. All the things. That was something that Bob couldn't deal with because he was like, okay, so thank you for all the guidance, but like, how did you know all of this stuff? Because you knew things there's no way that you can know. And he was like, well, there's this lady, and I think her name was Connie. She was a spiritual advisor and basically like a psychic. And so she saw the things and Father Ron told him the things.
What?
And I was like, wait, what? Like the Catholic Church has like the psychic on call and to do all the things. Like it was just like.
That's weird.
I feel like that is weird, right? Because I feel like the Catholic Church, again, I don't know anything about it. So honestly, but I feel like, yeah, they do the exorcisms and stuff like that, but they're not just like, psychics are real. This is
right.
Real. We're going to use that. Like, it's more about the power of the Bible, the prayer,
yeah.
All of that to get rid of evil spirits, like not like using a psychic. I don't know. It was just very weird.
But if you believe in like demons and stuff, like how could you not believe in a psychic to help you? You know what I mean?
Well, I could turn that around on you.
No, I know. I'm insightful. I thought about it as soon as I said it.
Okay.
I said I wasn't going into the demon house.
But I'm just saying you will say no about so many other things.
Yeah, but it's no about like other things. It's not just like demons.
Uh-huh.
It's no about like a chupacabra. It's not necessarily no about like this person had a ghost in their house. I believe in ghosts.
Okay, well, first it's chupacabra.
Whatever it is.
Would say. But also, why couldn't that exist then?
Because that's silly. What is it really? Chupacabra?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, y'all let us know what y'all think. And am I making any sense? And tell us if you would stay in the demon house. Tell us all the things about what you thought about this episode. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to like, subscribe, review, all the things. And remember,
creep it real
and don't get scared.